This is Josh Mills.
And this is John Mills.
Welcome back to another episode of Acquired Tastings. We are very happy to have you along with us for another episode that's not out of the archives. This is a fresh episode this week.
Wow. I'm excited about it. And we both have Paso Robles type wines. Josh he's going to have to tell us about it, but you went on a trip and went down there and tasted some. And why don't you tell what wine you have, what food, and then I'll do mine, okay?
Yeah, so as the wine that's mine, I brought from Union Sacra Vineyards. It is the Cipini, and it is a Carbonic Sangiovese. And then my food this week, I have some oven roasted chicken with a pan gravy and prosciutto and Parmesan. What about you, Dad?
Okay. So that I match you as close as I can, because this is remote, listeners, I'm in Arkansas and Josh is in Montana. And so I think we've told you before on other episodes, you can't always get in Arkansas what Josh gets in Montana, or even maybe he brought something back from Paso. So what I had, what?
I'm going to say both of these I actually brought from Paso.
Okay, that clears that up. So to try to match you, I have Destinia by Tooth and Nail, and it is a carbonic maceration of, what was it? Grenache. So it's not the same, but they're both carbonic, right? Yours is carbonic, mine's carbonic. And we had an episode with Susie Long about carbonic, and maybe we won't get down into the weeds of the vineyard, but who knows what'll happen. And so trying to match your food, I went out to Edwards and I got a roasted chicken, and then I got some prosciutto that's wrapped over some mozzarella cheese. And it's going to be as close a match as I can get. Now, for my wine, I have one called Harvey and Harriet, and it is from the Paso area. It says it's actually from San Lucas Obispo County. So that's the county, right, Josh? And it is a red wine blend. And then for my food, what I have is some of Uncle Gene's famous beef tenderloin that he cooked up for the eclipse day. And then I have some goat cheese with herbs. And then I have a British or English hard, sharp cheddar cheese. So we're going to have a great time. Did you try to match my food or what?
No, I did not. I just made sure to have my stuff done in time because I taught this morning.
Well, that's what I figured. But you do have a wine that's trying to match mine, right?
I do. I have a blend from Paso Robles as well. This is from Hubba Vineyards, and it is mostly Carignan with some Syrah and Valdiguer.
All right. Sounds great. Sure. And we'll get into what my blend has in it. It's quite exciting, actually. Why don't you start us off, Josh? And before we do that, how about a cheers?
How about a cheers? Cheers,
Zach. All right. Cheers, Josh. Clink.
Yeah. So I'd like that just alluded to.
Woo! So when I was buying this wine, Nick says, wow, that's a wild one. You'll really like it. And I go, well, you're not so sure about liking it, but I know I'll enjoy the difference that it entails from just a regular old wine. So tell me about yours, Josh.
Well, before I get into mine, Dad alluded to it, but I actually, as of recording this, was in Paso about 3.5 weeks ago, maybe 4 weeks at this point. And I was there with one of my wine buddies. If you're a long listener of the show, you'll know Jeff Ford. from one of our early episodes when Dad was traveling. Him and I went down to Paso because we were celebrating the life of my former mentor in Arkansas, Joe St. Anna, the former owner of Crush Wine Bar. His wife now owns it because Joe passed in, what was it, August of last year?
Yeah, that sounds right.
July or August of last year.
Oh, I think it's July.
Yeah, so we were, Jeff and I had planned this trip. It was right around Joe's and Jeff's, actually, birthday. And we decided to go to Paso because, well, first for me, Paso was the first trip with Jeff and Joe that I was able to go on. And it was just a kind of a special place, and we had some special stops along the way. But it was really interesting for me because this is my first time being the guy who plans the trip, which was really interesting. So it was lots of fun. And with my current job here in Montana, we had some great appointments set up. But this one, actually Union Sacra, is a place. It's what's called a garage vintner, basically.
Okay, so in Josh, Paso, I don't really understand garage vineyards, so maybe you explain that. You probably were getting ready to. Sorry for the interruption.
That's okay. I mean, everyone was probably thinking the same question. So in California, land is extremely expensive, but the facilities that you need to make wine are not as expensive as land. And you can buy grapes from people who are growing particular styles and all of that. So what a garage vineyard or a garage winery is basically a company that buys or sources grapes. Sometimes they'll have small plots of land. And then they, in usually warehouse spaces or old, you know, auto shops or garages, they will actually turn it into a little winery. So Union Sacra is one of the people that does this. And it's really cool. So in Paso, there's this area called Tin City. And within Tin City, there are a ton of vintners. And not only there's a couple of restaurants, there's a brewery, there's a cider house. And it's just a really cool area where all these super small groups of people making wine come together and have all their little wineries. So Jeff and I had an appointment at a place in Tin City called Desperada. And then he had mentioned wanting to go to Union Sacra, and we have Union Sacra wine in our bottle shop. And actually now we have one on our menu.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
We went over there and had a great time. So this is their Cipini. Union Sacra focuses in Alsatian style wines. And this is one that's actually kind of more of a quite kind of California style wine, but what they do is they source this Sangiovese from a local vineyard in Paso Robles, and then they do carbonic maceration on it, which we've talked about before. If you're new here, carbonic, real quick, is basically they put the grapes in a tub without pressing them, seal it up, and then the CO2 that's released from the beginnings of fermentation because of weight pressing and there's yeast on the skins starts the fermentation process without oxygen. And what it does is it gives a really bright, fresh, really fruity, almost candy fruit characteristic to the wine. So this one, like I said, is Sangiovese, and they only make 192 cases of this. Union Sacra is a smaller production kind of company.
Right.
And it's really, really good. So like with this one, you get a lot of like really fresh, like raspberry, at least with mine. Like I get like a lot of like candied raspberry and like almost some like cherry juice, like good sweetened cherry juice, fresh sweetened cherry juice.
So Josh, I'm getting like on this one, like cherry cotton candy.
Mm-hmm.
Strawberries, not those Arkansas strawberries, but those strawberries that have some good aroma, but not as sweet as Arkansas strawberries. And then maybe even a touch of watermelon. I mean, this guy's going all over the place, and kiwi even. And kiwi doesn't have much, so it's buried down in there. And kiwi doesn't have much smell, but man, I'm getting all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, and so basically, like, when you take something and you do carbonic maceration on it, it's going to be like candied versions of the original wine itself, which is really, really fun. But yeah, so Union Sacra is really, it's a great place. I got to meet the winemaker there. Springtime in wine country is a good time to go because there's usually some action going on. Like while we were there, it was bottling season.
Oh, so okay.
A lot of people were bottling their current vintages. And like I said, when we were at Union Sacra, we met the winemaker. He also let us taste some things out of his tanks right before because he was about to bottle the next day.
Oh, what was that like? Wow.
It was fascinating. So like it's really cool because you're tasting a finish. The wine is finished. Like,
oh, okay. It's
ready to go.
Oh, okay. So it's not raw. Bottle. Oh, okay. So it's already gone through the maceration, the CO2, the press of the weight of the vines.
Gone through everything.
It's okay. Now, was that in concrete vats or did they put it in stainless steel
vats? They use stainless steel and they have some, what are called footers. They have some large, big, oval oak footers that they use for that. But I'm fairly certain this was probably mostly done through stainless steel.
Okay. Now, mine says it's aged 3 months in neutral French oak.
Yeah.
And then an additional 5 months in concrete. And that's after it's all completed. So I'm getting that wonderful French oak kind of flavor along with all this sweetness.
What French oak flavor are you getting? Because when it's a neutral barrel, you shouldn't be getting any oak.
So I'm not getting the vanilla that we get with American oak, but I'm getting just that woodiness, if you will, of the oak. And maybe that's just because I'm reading some of the information about it and it's way, way down in the background, okay? Just some like sometimes when we taste a wine, we go, oh, there's leather down in there, and that's how deep this is. It's way deep.
Well, and some of that woodiness, Dad, actually might be stems.
It could be the vine, yeah.
Over oak woodiness, because when they do it, you know, they do it whole cluster, so they're not de-stemming the grapes.
That's right.
Before they press.
Wow. So you went to this location and did they have a vineyard right there beside this, you know, AKA garage type area?
No, okay. This is in an industrial area of right outside the town of Templeton, which is just south of the town of Paso Robles.
Okay. What it sounds
same
really
with my
lovely.
Other wine. The other wine that I have today is from that same Tin City area. And they're both sourcing a majority of their grapes.
So you've had
like, when I say this, they're like they'll make relationships with growers to grow particular things. Like I mentioned, Union Sacra focuses in Alsatian style wines. So they have Gewürztraminer, they have Pinot Blanc, Pinot Gris, Riesling, a blend called Edelsweker. So they really focus in those styles. But Paso's really hot, so they source a lot of those.
Okay, yeah.
From down in the San Luis Obispo area, because it's a little bit cooler. They have a little bit more mountains that they kind of grow up into down in San Luis Obispo.
So from a geography lesson, you could fly into San Francisco, right? And then go south. How far?
I'll kind of explain it. So if you fly into San Francisco, to get to Paso Robles, you're going to drive south for 3.5 to 4 hours to get there.
Okay.
And then you're in Paso Robles. If you drive 30 to 45 minutes south of Paso Robles, you are in San Luis Obispo. If you drive, I think, 30 to 45 minutes south of there, you're in Santa Barbara. And if you drive about an hour and a half south again, you're in LA.
Gotcha.
So that's kind of the area. And then, you know, from San Francisco, it's about an hour, 45 minutes to an hour to get to Sonoma. And then if you want to get this from Sonoma to Napa, it's about 25 minutes east.
Right, right.
So California is a fascinating place for wine.
Yeah.
So you could, what, Dad?
I need to go there. Well, I was going to say you could fly into LA, which is, I guess, more in some ways a more major airport, and then just drive north.
Yeah, but if you, like, I would honestly suggest what Jeff did. Fly into San Luis Obispo, and then you only have a 30-minute drive.
Gotcha. So I've been snacking over here. Have you tried any of your food yet?
I have. Why don't you tell me about what your, how yours go first?
Well, I have the prosciutto wrapped around the mozzarella cheese. And so I didn't know really with the carbonic and the sweetness how that would work. I was afraid that the prosciutto would kind of stand up to that sweetness and not give it a sour or anything, but maybe have the wine kind of just in the background. But it seemed like the wine stood up to the prosciutto and the cheese, you know, just like, you know, just like maybe you expected. And then I'm getting ready to try the roasted chicken. What actually have you tried with your wine, food wise?
I've tried everything.
Oh, okay.
You forget I'm a really good eater and talker.
Yeah, well, okay.
I find those moments. So for me, like, the prosciutto works really, really well. It does kind of bring the wine down a little bit, kind of ground it, mm-hmm. where the, you know, the carbonic of this wine really kind of lifts it, makes it really ethereal. And the prosciutto kind of brings it down, gives it kind of, it almost tastes more like a really light-bodied Tuscan wine when I have it with the prosciutto. With the Parmesan, now I don't have very high quality Parmesan. It's not Parmigiano Reggiano by any means.
Well, is it just slices of Parmesan, or is it grated? Or
Did you make a Parmesan cookie?
How'd you do it? No,
I cut chunks off of a wedge.
All right.
And it works well. What I was really wanting to lean into with this pairing, and I didn't realize my Parmigiano wasn't this as salty. So I wanted to play that salt aspect. But it does have that kind of nice saltiness that enhances some of the, like, secondary things going on in the wine. So, like, it's a little bit more like grassy and, like, mm-hmm. almost that, you know, when you talk about Chiantis, you sometimes talk about dust and tomato leaf and earth. Like, it really brings in those kind of aspects to the wine, and but still with that bright, fun fruit going on with it, which is just wonderful.
So I've now tried the roasted chicken. Now, Edwards had two choices there. They had a smoked one and they had a roasted one. And I kind of wanted to mimic what you were doing. If I read our texting right, you have, you know, herbs and salt and things like that. Well, this is roasted, but I know they've salted and peppered it because there's a little bit of spice. And that that spice that's on that chicken is going really well with this wine. You know, it's like you don't need to drink something this flavorful and then think, oh, I can't eat that, you know, real spicy chicken with it. I think this would stand up to that smoked chicken.
Oh, yeah.
Or even a barbecued chicken, because the flavors I'm getting with the wine itself, they're just marinated together, and you know, this chicken and you know, the saltiness and that, you know, that spice, whatever they've got on this chicken that they roasted, is really enhancing for me. That's the sweetness of the tanginess, if you will, and the, you know, the watermelon. It's like I'm almost at a picnic, you know? I'm almost at a picnic because I've got the watermelon, I've got the cotton candy, and then I've got this roasted chicken, and I want to just, I'm looking over there, where's the fire for the fireplace, you know, the outdoor fire, because, you know, I'm at this picnic, and it's really, really good.
Yeah, I mean, it's really fun, like, what carbonic can do to a wine and kind of lift it, like, so yeah, like, so the chicken that I did, I salt and peppered, and then I had a citrus herb seasoning that I got from Trader Joe's, and an Italian seasoning, put it on there, and I put it in the oven in a cast iron pan on top of some onion with some smashed garlic in the pan too.
And oh yeah.
Underneath the skin, I had a roasted garlic butter that I put in there.
Does Helena now have a Trader Joe's?
No, I bought some when I was in California because I'd run out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I sacrificed a little space for a couple Trader Joe's things.
Well, and when you come to Arkansas, you sneak in some Trader Joe's. Too bad you don't have one.
Well, yeah, and Helena would not be the first town they would put one in if they did. Yeah.
Well, it's not the biggest, that's for sure.
No. Let's talk about.
Because I haven't looked real deep, but what is the soil like in the Paso area? You talked about some saltiness maybe from a sea breeze, but what's that soil like? Is it alberithium and maybe some limestone mix? I mean, what is it?
It depends on what part of Paso, because Paso has been recently split up into seven or 12 different districts based on soil. I don't know particularly for this, but when I was talking about the salt aspect, I wanted to bring in salt with the cheese.
Okay.
Because I really like playing with salt with my wine pairings and thinking about that, because like, I would suggest the cheese that you have, Dad.
Mm-hmm.
I would try the cheese that you brought for your pairing with carbonic wine.
Oh, that.
I believe we're
not yet to the crossover stage, Josh.
When have we ever actually waited?
I can't reach it right now. It's a problem. I can't reach it. It's at the other end of the table.
So I believe where the district where your wine comes from is in the Willow. I think they're in the Willow Creek district. No, they're a little west of it. Anyway, there are some pockets of really like that calcareous limestone that really kind of brings up some of those bright acidity, like minerality pieces. But I did not look into exactly where this vineyard is, but I would assume it's on kind of, for lack of a better term, nothing really special, particularly about the soil.
Okay.
Probably more has to do with the climate of this region to grow the Sangiovese.
Right.
But the chicken that I have, the chicken with this pan gravy that I made, that idea was inspired by one of the dinners that Jeff and I had. So one night in Paso, Jeff and I had dinner at a place called, I think it's called Bistro BL now, but it used to be called Bistro Laurent. And it's the same food. So it's like super classic French bistro style food.
Oh, okay. And okay.
Him and I both, that night, got a half roasted chicken, and we were both blown away because we forgot how good a good roasted chicken can be. And they had like a really thin pan gravy with it.
Okay.
And I think we drank Nebbiolo that night.
Oh, okay.
But it worked really, really well. And I was thinking, okay, light bodied, really kind of fresh in this gravy. And this works so well. This herby, earthy chicken, garlicky kind of chicken with a nice herby gravy to it is just, first of all, the chicken itself is just wonderful. And I didn't roast the whole chicken. I had chicken thighs in my freezer that I took out a day or so ago.
Oh, okay.
And roasted the chicken thighs on top of the garlic. Right. The garlic.
Well, this chicken that at Edwards is nothing special. And I've never seen where they roast them, but they do a really good job.
Is it their rotisserie chicken?
Yeah.
Or are they just, yeah.
That
rotisserie chickens are so good.
Yeah. When I was checking it out, they were training the checker, and she kind of did it sideways a little bit to get the barcode, and got a little scolding saying, yeah, be careful doing that because the juices are going to get all over the place. And it is nice and juicy, and the flavor is great, and this wine just goes so well with it. I might have to sneak what you were saying.
Well, I mean, for you guys. Well, I mean, for us, they're springtime temperatures, but they're cold temperatures for you. Well, I think it's supposed to get up to 60 today. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
But I mean, this, like, either one of these wines are great springtime wines. They're light. They're fresh. I don't know about you. I put a little chill on mine.
Oh, yeah, I did. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. 15, 20 minutes in the fridge, like chill it off just a little bit, put it in a bucket. I've been telling everybody this that I know. I know Arkansas and Montana are both known for like going outside and doing things. And one of the things that people like to do are be on the river or like in a lake kind of thing. I tell people who are like going to the river, I was like, listen, you don't have to try and find canned or wine that's not in a glass bottle to take it. Yes, you can't take the glass with you, but if you just pour that wine into a standard size Nalgene, you're going to have plenty of room in there.
Yeah.
And then if you're floating the river or you're fishing on the river, take that, put it in the river, and it's going to stay cold. It's going to stay cool. It's not going to get too hot. And all you got to do is pop your Nalgene open, and then you can have whatever great wine you want. Anywhere you can go.
You want a piece of this cheese, Josh? Oh, goodness.
What kind of cheddar is it, Dad? Do you remember what kind of English cheddar it is?
No, it just said English sharp cheddar. Or maybe it said extra sharp. But there is some salt in there, definitely. And we're doing best on play this podcast.
Not yet.
Well, I mean, are we? Because this crossover might have to be best on plate with my carbonic wine. Because, you know, that saltiness, that just enhances it.
Mm-hmm. All right, I'm pouring just a little bit more of mine. Oh, so tell me about your eclipse experience. Because I didn't get the eclipse up here. Well, I mean, we had one. We had a 48% eclipse, but it was cloudy all day.
Was it cloudy all day? Oh, yeah. You won't believe it. I mean, it was, okay, the eclipse was on Monday. Sunday, it was raining and cloudy. Not real heavy clouds, but cloudy and rain. And then Monday, we get up and it's almost, well, the weather report said 48%, but cloudy. It was not 48% cloudy. And so we went over to Uncle Gene's house, your Uncle Gene, my brother-in-law, and he's got that portico and set it up with chairs, and he had 10 people coming. And so you could sit on the house side of the portico and be in the shade, and then you could go out on the other edge of the portico and lean up against the wall of the portico so you're not falling off the deck portico. And you're basically looking straight up because it started at 12:37, I think it was. And then totality was like at 1:52. And it was amazing. I mean, I've never really been in a total eclipse. And everything they say is so true. The temperature drops, it gets dark. Karen, who lives next door, her nighttime lights came on. You know, the photo cell said, oh, it's night. And we took a few pictures. We got a special lens to put in front of my phone camera. Got some pretty good ones, but it's amazing. It's just literally amazing. We had Shawnut Gardens, of course. We had other wine, of course. I made an eclipse drink, of course. We had Lost 40s eclipse beer, of course. I mean, you know, and food, of course. Gene did his beef tenderloin, like he always does for events like that. But yeah, it was fantastic. And
yeah, so
you're watching the pre eclipse of the, you know, the mouse eating the cheese, you know, working its way up. Mm-hmm. And it's like 80 minutes to get there. And then you get 3 minutes and 37 seconds, which was like the speed of light. I mean, that 3 minutes was faster than any other 3 minutes all day. Or it seemed that way.
Of course.
Yeah. But everything, you know, it was so amazing. And then you get the crescents.
The diamond ring.
The diamond ring, the beads, and then we were lucky enough that there was this red dot at the bottom of the sun, which was some big solar flare.
Yeah, okay. And then
Venus and Saturn, I think it's Saturn, show themselves. And I got a picture. You talked about a comet, and I got a picture that maybe is the comet, because I don't know what else it could be. It's a streak.
Yeah, so the comet was, when you were looking at totality, the comet was going to be up and to the left.
Okay.
From where it was. But I was going to mention something, because when we talked about it earlier, you mentioned the red dots. And then I saw an article that it was NASA saying, yeah, there were like 4 or 5 massive solar flares that were visible
by the naked
during
eye.
The eclipse, which is incredible to me. To think about how big those were too.
Yeah, and one of the things I learned with all the hoopla that's going on, learning about the center of the sun, like 10 billion degrees Kelvin, and as you get out to the edge, the temperature is dropping, and then the flares come out of that outside edge, and they're like 10 billion again or more. They said maybe even 10 times the center of the sun in temperature.
Yeah, anyway, if you can't tell, guys, not only are we nerds about wine and other alcohol, but sciencey stuff too.
Tell us some more about Paso, and then I'm about ready to switch over if you are.
Well, go ahead and pour while I'm talking then, and then when you'll be ready to go.
Okay.
For yours. So, well, I mean, Paso's amazing. Like, I really like going to Paso as a wine trip, because there are certain places in California that can feel almost like Disney World, or very, very corporate kind of feelings. When you go there, and like when you go to a tasting room, you're just a number to, you know, you're just the next person up that they're trying to get through and get through their day. I mean, they're nice, but sometimes you just have that feeling of, okay, we're rotating through here. Paso's not that way. Paso is still can be very intimate when it comes to tasting room experiences. And so when I first started going to Paso, the first time I went to Paso, Jeff and I looked it up, was 2013.
Oh, okay.
And I think back then there were maybe 70 or 80 wineries in Paso. This last time when I went, there were over 300.
Oh, wow. What a difference. Paso. Wow.
And a lot of those are like we talked about. They're those quote unquote garage wineries that are, because Paso has a lot of fruit. They grow a ton of fruit there. So there's a lot of sourceability to the area. So it was, yeah, it's just incredible. And I went to a couple places.
Yeah, a couple of places. The first time, or are you talking about now?
No, this time. I went to a couple places this time that I think their production level was like 300 cases, which is nothing, which is so small.
Yeah.
Maybe 700 cases. Like, and when I say that, like, it sounds like a big number, but it's really, really not. If you think about 700 cases of wine, that's what?
Times 12.
About 9,000 bottles, which in the grand scheme of a wine, in when you think about wine, that's not really a whole lot. When you have people who like, you know, people like Dow or Eberle who are probably making 9,000 cases.
Yeah, okay.
A year. Like it's really those really, really small production level. And that's just like, it's just kind of how Paso is. It still feels really homey, and it's really nice to go in and get that kind of a lot of that, like, still one-on-one attention.
Exactly. Where
sometimes if you go to Napa or Sonoma or even Santa Barbara now, I think some, you know, one tasting attendant may be working with three or four groups, and there are like five tasting attendants.
So when you go there, because you're a person of the industry, it's not like when I go there and I pay my $50 or whatever for a flight. You go there and you don't pay, or if you do pay, it's a minimal charge, and then you don't get the flight of five. You get 12 or something. Explain how that works.
So it really depends on, it depends on the winery. It depends on, honestly, also it depends on the area in which you're in. So one of the things that we as industry professionals do when we go on a wine trip like this is we will set up appointments with wineries, and we do that through our distributors. So we reach out to the people who sell us the wine and say, hey, I'm going to this area. Would you be able to set up any appointments for me with so-and-so?
Oh, okay.
And so that's a different, like, that's one level of it. And that's a very, that can be a very different experience than what an average person will have. Because one of the things that they, when you go as an industry person, you're not going just like to try the wine and kind of understand the wine, because a lot of times you've probably already tried it, but you learn more about their production philosophy, about their growing philosophy, who they are as a company, and then also some of the stories behind it, so that you can then turn around and then share those with your customers when you return.
Right, right.
So that's why some of the times, well, almost all the times, when you're an industry person, the things that you taste are much more than what the average person going into a tasting would get. And that's also some of the same philosophy of why industry professionals don't always pay for their tasting.
Right.
Because it's a, hey, you're selling our wine. We're kind of thanking you for that. And we're kind of giving this to you. Now, some of it's changing with how widespread wine is being sold. There were a couple places that Jeff and I went where we both had to pay for our tastings, because their policy is that they only extend the industry discount, as they call it, to local industry.
Okay, yeah.
If you think about it, with wine and grocery now, there's so many people that could say they're in the industry, but they're not really.
Oh, I never thought of that. Right. That guy in Kroger's, oh, I'm in the industry because we got 2 aisles of, of this cheap wine.
So there's some of that going on.
He doesn't have a wine industry business card, though.
He might be one of the 5 wine stewards for his local Kroger.
Kind of thing.
All right. But
so my wine has an ABV of 13.1. What about yours? Do you know?
13.4.
Okay. So why don't you, I'm
going to step back from my conversation about the industry piece, and why don't you remind us what your wine is, tell us the blend, the varietal blend in there, and what your pairings are with it.
Okay, so I have the Harvey and Harriet wine, red blend, and it's an interesting bottle because it's a very, very simple label. It's got the words, Harvey and Harriet. And then up at the top, it's like, looks like 2 young people kind of dancing, and they're only half an inch tall. And down at the bottom, there's a nice little heart. And so I'll tell the story of who Harriet and Harvey are or were in a few minutes. But to remind you what my food is, I have that wonderful beef tenderloin that Dr. Gene Shelby, AKA my brother-in-law, your uncle, made for the eclipse. And then I also have a herb goat cheese. And then I have this British sharp white cheddar. And what wine are you drinking to kind of pair with me on this red wine?
So the red blend wine that I'm drinking from Paso is from Hubba Wines, H-U-B-B-A, Hubba Wines, and it is a wine called Mushroom Head, and the blend is 71% Carignan, 25% Syrah, and 4% of Valdiguet.
Oh, wow. Okay. So my blend is, and it doesn't show the percentages, but I would bet that the highest percentage is the Cabernet Sauvignon, but I don't know. So it has Cabernet Sauvignon, it has Syrah, it has Petit Syrah, it has Petit Verdot, it has Cabernet Franc, and it has Malbec. So I don't know the percentages, but that's a huge amount of blending for a wine, wouldn't you say?
That's the standard Bordeaux blend.
Okay, and that is exactly what they were trying to do. They're trying to make something that mimics a Bordeaux.
Yeah.
And then, on the nose, I'm getting the black cherry or Bing cherry. I'm getting the red raspberry. I'm getting the blueberries. Not so much. I don't know what rhubarb smells like, but maybe there's some of that in there. From a spice standpoint, I'm getting, some spices, maybe cardamom, something like that. It's a lovely ruby red, almost that purple red color. And, you got that, that light manesis out on the end. And we talk about the legs, and the legs really don't mean much, but the legs are really nice and distinct. They're kind of, bold. So I'm going to take a sip here.
So a little bit more while he's tasting a couple things and his wine in and of itself. So as an industry professional, like I said, we book appointments and to go to particular wineries, and those appointments a lot of times will last between 1.5 hours and 2 hours sometimes. So they're long stints where we're learning a lot. Or sometimes, like I mentioned about Union Sacra, sometimes they'll take us back into the production area and we'll kind of see things and learn more so that we can so that it enhances our ability to sell and show off their wines. But the other thing we do, like Dad mentioned when it comes to the card, is we can go, sometimes we'll go to other places and, you know, we'll put down a card saying, hey, I'm from so-and-so place, and maybe I sell your wines, maybe I don't, maybe it's a winery I know that I want to, like, bring in. Like, for Union Sacra, you know, I put down my card and said, hey, you know, we have some Union Sacra wine. I'd love, my friend and I would love to do a tasting here. And then then a lot of times we'll go through a standard tasting, and then sometimes, not all the time, they may have some other wines that are open that they're maybe for their club members or other events that they have done. And then they'll share those with us, because it is that kind of like, we appreciate you for selling our stuff and helping our brand, so we're going to reciprocate that back to you. But like I mentioned just a minute ago, that doesn't always happen. You know, yeah. There are times that, you know, you have to pay for things, and sometimes they're very skeptical. Like, there was a place that I sat down and, you know, told them, hey, I'm from Montana. I work at this place. I'm looking for smaller places who may fit our ethos, so we can talk to our distributors and get your wine into our state. And they're like, okay, but you still gonna have to pay for your tasting. And I'm like, okay, that's fine, whatever. And then you start talking to them, and they understand that you are somebody who is knowledgeable and in the industry. And then they will reciprocate that, kind of taking care of the tasting for you. And honestly, guys, if you go anywhere, you can almost always not pay for your tasting by buying two bottles of wine. Like, that's the standard.
If you buy
two bottles of wine, you won't pay for your one of your tastings.
Yeah.
So that's in like another little way to do it. And just the other thing about like getting free sips or extra taste or whatever, it's just, honestly, this sounds so dumb to say, but be nice. Be nice, be engaging, like, ask questions. If you're going there to like actually like learn more, those tasting room people love that, because especially in California, if you think about it, you know, sometimes there are just, you know, bridesmaids part, you know, bridal groups, grooms groups, like, and people who are just like going to see how many places they can go to in a day and just get drunk. Get shit housed,
right?
So when there's this person who's really engaging, ask questions, and like really wants to gain knowledge from the tasting room professional,
right?
They love that, and you may
absolutely
may not receive more from that experience than just going in and doing the tasting, paying, and walking out.
So what you're saying is, if you're nice and you ask those questions, and they realize that you're pretty knowledgeable, and maybe you are that guy that could broker their wines to Helena, which they're not familiar with, to the Hawthorne. They say, oh, here, would you like to try this other one and bring you another bottle? And then you get to taste that one in comparison to the one you just tasted.
Well,
am I right on that?
You are, but it doesn't, the other thing I want to be careful about saying is, just because they don't do that doesn't diminish the experience that you can have there, and shouldn't be looked at as like, oh, if I do this, then they should be doing this.
Yeah. It's
like, no, they don't. You you respect their house just like you would want them to respect your house when you came
exactly.
in.
Exactly. Exactly. So Josh, Harriet, Harvey and Harriet were the mom and dad of Eric Jensen, and he's the farmer and the winemaker of this wine that I've brought to the table. And there's a nice little video. It's only a 30 seconds or more, but shows him and his mom growing up. It looks like this is back in my time frame of the 50s, 60s. And, you know, mom's doing all the things that she can for Eric, and I think there was another sibling. But to have wine made in honor of them, and on the back of this bottle, it says, everyone's favorite neighbors. talking about dedicated to mom and dad. And that's cool. I mean, to honor your mom and dad by making a special wine. And this wine has a price point. And oh, by the way, the carbonic wine that I had a price point of $25. Then you can get it on Wine Wednesday and get that 20% off. This one has a price point of only $36. And so you get the Wine Wednesday 20% off. And there's another one that I did buy. And I wish you were here to taste it. And we taste it together. Called My Favorite Neighbor. And I'm sure
it's from Harvey and Elliot too.
Yeah. And I think that is, I haven't looked it up, but I think that's more 100% or a very high percentage of Cabernet Sauvignon.
Is it over here as such?
Yes. So that means it's got to be what's the percentage if it's labeled as cab? It's got to be 80 or something.
If it says Paso Robles on it,
it does.
It has to be at least 80%.
Okay. And that price point of that one is 60, 62. And then Wine Wednesday, that brings it down to like 48. This wine is really good, and I've tasted it with the beef tenderloin. And for the listener's sake, what Gene does is he uses some spices, but the main rub that he has on his beef tenderloin is a spicy mustard. And so this beef tenderloin and that spicy mustard and this wine are a pair, oh, need I say it, made in heaven. It's so good. I wish you were here, Josh.
Yeah, I wish I was there
too. And you've had his beef tenderloin, so you know at least half the story.
Yeah, and I mean, a good cab-based, heavier Bordeaux-style blend would be a fantastic pairing with it because, you know, with that being a leaner cut of meat, you don't need a whole bunch of extra acidity or too many tannins to kind of go over with it. And that would go really well with the mustard. It's in the same vein that this this blend from Mushroom Head that has mostly Carignan, which is a kind of a lighter and more acidic kind of style of wine, goes really well with my roasted chicken. Like when I taste it, really brings out the lemoniness of the herb mix and spice mix that I put onto the chicken itself, but it works really, really well with it. It also goes great with the prosciutto, but I mean, I think almost anything goes great with prosciutto, but that's just me and my styling of what I like to eat. But it goes really, really well.
And the goat cheese. I have a goat cheese and I've got some crackers and.
Oh, you've got goat. What is it? Just regular?
It's one of those that comes in the box, and I should have kept the box to tell you what the name of it was, but it's got some herbs in it, so it's nothing really.
So it's like the boursin.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. Thank you. It's boursin goat cheese, and I've got it on a cracker that's got some, you know, sesame seeds and other seeds in the cracker itself, and, you know, that goes very well.
Yeah, it does.
And, you know, these want, you know, this is fun.
Yeah, so, well, so what episode are we on, Dad?
162.
162. It's crazy to think that it's been that long.
It's episode 162, and I'd have to look, but we're coming up on 16,000 downloads. I'm looking now to see what it is. It's probably 15979. You listeners that are out there, keep listening, because we're trying to keep going a little bit. We're kind of slacking down. We've had 24 downloads in April, But we had 254 in February, so maybe after this new episode, we'll jump on up there.
Yeah, and we are, just so you know, we are trying to figure out how to do this distance podcast. I know I do have a couple people around me currently that have expressed interest in doing an episode with me, so I'm working on some of those logistics of what that would look like and when we could get it done. So just know we haven't abandoned you. There's still content that we are looking at creating for you, and you know, we just, once again, we always appreciate that y'all are there. All right, Dad, I don't know about you, but I'm kind of ready for best on plate.
Unless, well,
you got more you want to talk about with your wine.
You know, it's a really good wine, but I don't really have much more. I don't think I said did I say the ABV?
Yeah, you said at the beginning, it's 13.1.
No, that was the other one. This one is My carbonic was 13.1. This red blend is 14.1.
Okay, well, my carbonic was 12.2, and my blend is 13.4.
Okay. Well, you know, Tooth and Nail, and that's who did my carbonic, they got that ABV thing down. They like to get that ABV on up there. And I think that's partly because they know us winos kind of like that ABV as we're drinking. And with carbonic, I think it's probably pretty hard to get 13.1. I mean, I don't know how that works. But anyway.
There's a lot of picking. You know, when do you pick? How ripe is it? How much, you know, how much sugar is in the grape? Those mm-hmm. sorts of questions. Mm-hmm.
So you're ready you're ready for best on plate, huh?
I am. So with my Cipini, actually, you know what? Honestly, I just took a taste of the mushroom head. For both of mine, it's the chicken, the roasted chicken with the gravy. It's
for both wines.
It's really, yeah, for both of my wines. But
okay,
out of the two,
you only had one plate. Is that right?
I only had one plate.
Okay, well, that's okay. I'll let that be legal.
But out of the two, the Cipini works the best with the chicken, in my opinion. They both kind of lifted each other and took each other to a new place, and it was just really, really good. Which I think, you know, a good roasted chicken and a lighter bodied wine is phenomenal. Anyway, so what about you?
So. You only had one plate. I have two plates, so I'm not sure if I get to cross over or not. So I'm not going to cross over yet, but if I do, I'll tell you the answer. So with the carbonic, that roasted chicken was the winner because of that saltiness, those spices, and that carbonic sweetness. I've said it before, it's like a picnic, and I'm sticking with that because, you know, you go to a picnic and you got all these different choices of food, and the wine can just enhance so many of those choices. And I don't have one of those machines to make the cotton candy, but that was in there. And that, to me, that's okay. That's not a picnic. I guess that's going to the fair. But anyway, it's so good. Now, if I get to cheat and cross over, this English sharp cheddar cheese, I think would outdo the chicken just because of that cheese saltiness. And part of it has to do with the mouthfeel of that hard white cheddar. Just seems to go better with that carbonic.
Okay.
So, and you already
what did. What about with your other plate?
You already did your red. So, Gene's beef tenderloin. I mean, you know, we could just sit here and just eat that with any wine we wanted or any beer. I tried Lost 40's Eclipse beer, and it's very good. I've got some. I wish you were right here. I'd just hand you a can so you could try it. But I didn't drink it with his beef tenderloin, but it would go very well because it's a, it's like an Amber Bock beer, just specially made for the Eclipse. The can is wonderful.
The can. Dad, just a minute. Anything that you would have with Gene's beef tenderloin would be your favorite. Anything. You're a sucker for that.
I was kind of leading up to that. You're right. Yeah, you're right.
All right, well.
Maybe the margaritas I had last night would go with it.
It probably would.
Well, it actually did because we cut some of that up and made it in made it into Mexican fajitas, and there you have it.
Yep, it's Gene's beef tenderloin. If it's on the plate, is gonna win. All right, well, you know, since we're apart, we're not gonna be doing a blind this week, so we just really hope that y'all come back for the next episode, maybe from the archive. It may be a live episode. We'll just have to kind of play that by ear, wait and see. And
so I think I heard a teaser. I think I heard a teaser that it could be you and someone from the Hawthorne bottle.
I didn't
shop.
Say anything about the Hawthorne. I just said, I know that there
are. I heard a teaser.
I just say there are people here who I have come to know in Helena who are interested about being on the podcast. I didn't say anything about the Hawthorne.
Okay.
But since there's no reason for you guys to come back to figure out what the blind is, I was just saying, just come back. You never know. We maybe have from the archives. We may have from a live episode. But once again, we really just appreciate all of you for being along on this journey with us. It has been, you know, a crazy almost year since I have. Can you believe that? It's been almost a year since I moved to Montana.
That's right.
It's really hard to believe. So
11 months.
We really appreciate every single one of you for being here with us. We appreciate every single download that we get. Remember, you can follow us out there on the socials. We're Acquired Tastings on the platforms. Send us an email, acquiredtastings@gmail.com. We're on your favorite podcast platforms, Acquired Tastings, not Acquired Tasting. It's a different group. And we just appreciate the heck out of y'all. So for all of us here at Acquired Tastings, once again, I'm Josh Mills.
And I'm John Mills.
And we'll see you next time.
Thank you and goodbye.